everyone. I'm Linor Mudu. Welcome to Health Chat. Health literacy. It is defined as the capacity to obtain, interpret, and understand basic health information and services, and the competence to use such information and services to enhance health. According to a U.S. National Assessment of Adult Literacy Review from 2003, only 12% of adults in America have a proficient level of health literacy. The issue is a major challenge in many countries in sub-Saharan Africa, and low levels of health literacy means many people in America, Africa, and around the world have difficulty completing basic health tasks such as following instructions on how to take a prescription medication, for example. They are also less likely to seek out preventive services like some vaccination and are more likely to be in poor health. Now, we will discuss this very important topic. Joining us in the studio for more on the subject is Erwin Boateng, President of Quality Health Africa, an organization with the mission to strengthen Africa's health system by building sustainable medical facilities. Erwin, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me.
This is very important as a topic. We don't hear it very much, I have to admit. As a health reporter, I haven't covered it very much. True. So it's good to have that opportunity to do so today. Thank you for joining us.
It's a pleasure.
And also joining us later via phone from Washington, D.C., will be on the phone with us Dr. Akwa Asare, Quality Improvement Solution Science, Education and Quality Division with the American College of Cardiology. Dr. Asare will join us in a minute. And to our listeners, we do not take phone calls today, but you can always email us your thoughts and questions at healthchat@voanews.com. And we will make sure that we get back to you with a comment or questions, or answer rather. We will have our discussion with Dr. Asare in a moment when she joins us. But now let me turn to you, Erwin. And again, this is a very important topic. Basic literacy, okay, when we hear health literacy, how can we comprehend it in general, first of all?
So basic literacy is, of course, the general education that you get through the school systems. But health literacy is another echelon of education that focuses on basic practices that improves your health and prolongs life.
Okay, so then we're talking about, I mentioned earlier, vaccination, which we're looking at prevention and also treatment and care.
Correct.
Right.
Correct. So it's a vast area when it comes to not just vaccination, but the knowledge to go and get checked on an annual or biannual basis. And then the education aspect is also not for the citizens, but the healthcare professionals, because there is the need for a more skilled workforce in Africa's healthcare system. So when it's there's a totality when it comes to health literacy, because if the citizens are not being taught by skilled health professionals, then the wrong information has been disseminated along.
Absolutely. And you made such a good point, because a lot of time people don't even realize that they have to do a basic health check.
Correct.
Every year, especially at a certain age, right? We tend to think, okay, I feel good, I'm not sick. So then, or some people think of themselves as not falling, like being ill very often. They say, I'm in good health. So these people will not go and get a check.
And that is a very important thing, which is one of the things my organization focuses on. On an annual basis, we do health fairs quarterly all around the countries. And you realize that most sicknesses, before you actually start seeing the symptoms, it has gone to a fatal stage. So you don't have to wait till you're sick before you get checked, because sometimes what may seem like a headache is just a symptom of something bigger, which is really how Ebola took over a big part of Liberia.
Yes, and making a good point on Ebola, and we'll come back to that. Now, let's talk about the fact that people are not getting checked annually as they're supposed to. You know, we were talking about that.
Correct.
Earlier. Now, I'm going to say something, and please don't take it personal. Is it true that men usually do that less than women? Some men, they have this saying that men do not get checked until they are almost like next to the grave. Is that true?
I mean, when you go into sub-Saharan Africa, there's some facts to that, because men have that pride where we don't want you to see us weak, or you don't want you to see us as being down. Mm-hmm. So we kind of try to endure a lot. But when looking back at going home, you realize that the men are the ones that are usually working the most physical jobs, and they have to provide for their families. So they feel like a day off is a day that their families may be hungry. Mm-hmm. So it's pride, and also the entitlement to be in control, in charge of the family at all times.
That's a good point. But it's true also for other countries, cultures, because I've heard that comment here in the United States.
Yeah.
So maybe it's a men thing.
It's an ego thing, you know.
Just admit it. It's okay.
Yeah, you know, it's an ego thing. You can see us weak, you know. But it's not a good ego to have, though.
Okay, so we hope that more men come forward and understand that they have to get their annual health check. Okay, and as I said earlier, we will be joined by Dr. Asare, but until we are able to talk to her, let's talk about your observation. Who is generally at risk? I know we talked about mm-hmm. men not getting checked in terms of prevention sometimes, you know. I mean, it's not a general assessment, but this is sometimes it has been said. Now, when it comes to health illiteracy,
correct,
where do we observe it a lot of time, if we narrow down to sub-Saharan Africa?
So I think it's more women are the biggest victims, and then children ultimately. Mm-hmm. Survey says that a woman's knowledge on health literacy gives their children a bigger chance. Most kids that die under the age of 5, it's due to health illiteracy from the mother. Considering the baby spends, in most cases, majority of the time with the mother, it's up to the mother to be aware of how to treat the baby. So women and children are at risk most, you know. Okay. And the reason why that is children easily contract diseases, and they come straight to mama. So then it goes to the mom as well. In traditional Africa, the mothers spend more time with the kids than the father. So that's where it really all stems down to the most affected are women and children.
Very interesting. Now, what about the poverty factor?
If you don't have money, you can't get treated. So
that's for sure.
It's a huge factor, because most of the African countries do not have universal health care. Mm-hmm. And even if they do, it's liability. I know in Ghana they say there's a universal health care, but it's more of a liability. So you can get Advil for free, but you have to pay for anything above that, you know. So most people are poor. So the health facilities in those villages are outdated. So they have to travel, and they don't have money for transportation. So then they tend to go to traditional herbalists who may or may not be able to treat what they have. So poverty is a big aspect.
Mm-hmm. Now, you mentioned Ebola earlier, and let's talk about the extent to which health illiteracy had an impact on Ebola.
I've had this discussion a few times. I always say that health illiteracy is a very big contributor to why Ebola spread. And also because when Ebola had feverish symptoms, so you think you have a fever when you have Ebola. Well, in Africa, we've had so many fevers that I almost know what treatment to give myself when I have a fever. So then there's no need for me to go to the doctor. And the doctor would also see the same symptoms and say, hey, go take this medication because it's a fever. But it's just the symptoms of something deeper going on, which stems back to my point of getting checked, getting blood work done to know what's really going on inside.
Yeah, and even healthcare workers, I think you mentioned that, healthcare workers play a role. I know that at least one time, something that I was told, and I think I even witnessed something, where somebody went to the hospital and they could not identify what the illness was. The person had fever, and they say, okay, they did a test, a malaria test. It didn't come positive as malaria, but they say, take it just in case. How do you give treatment for a disease just in case when it has not been confirmed that it is the disease?
This is where I say there is a need to deploy skilled health workers. Last week, there's a famous actor in Ghana, Wayosi, whose 6-month-old daughter just died, and it made national news. And it's because the nurses gave the baby 5 millimeters worth of medication instead of 2.5. And that goes to the lack of knowledge and ample education on the part of the healthcare provider. So they are a very strong part. They play a systemic role in really tackling this health literacy issue.
So when we look at the way the issue is being dealt with, first of all, do you think it's really being addressed on the from at least in your country, if that's the experience that you have?
There's something being done, but there's definitely more that could be done, because when you go to the big cities, you see the awareness there, but then you stem down to the villages and they really have no idea what's going on. And when I go to Ghana, I spend a lot of time in the villages, which is where a lot of these outbreaks stem from, mm-hmm. because they lack the proper amenities, the skilled workers, and the knowledge to be able to determine what's going on with them. So the conversation needs to be had more than we are right now.
Yes, indeed. And that's what we're doing. And we hope to hear more on the topic. Now, let's talk about the impact of culture on health literacy. How would you describe the impact?
There is some significant impact of health literacy, because there are certain cultures who don't believe in, for example, blood transfusion. There are certain cultures in my country, Ghana, who do not believe in it.
And so, religion as well.
But religion.
We are on culture.
Correct.
Yes.
So there is a child right now, Caden. He has sickle cell, and he's going through the same issue right now where the family is not permitting for there to be for the procedure to be done on him, and he's at the risk of losing his life. So wow. Our culture impedes our ability to learn and really adapt to new technologies or new ways that would improve our lives.
But how do we address this specifically with culture when we know that culture is entrenched in people's life for generations to generations? And then how do you change that overnight? This is tough.
It's not an easy task, but I will say my organization, that's been one of our focuses during our annual health fairs. I go directly to the chiefs.
Okay.
And we talk to the chiefs. It's constant communication with the chiefs, and then illustration. Perfect example I'll give you is there's a specific tribe in Ghana who did not believe in using ultrasound machines.
Why? Is there a reason?
The reason is they didn't want anything to tamper with the pregnancy, because they thought it was spiritual or dirty to the birth. So through partnership with GE, we had this portable ultrasound machine that looked like a cell phone. Okay. And so we went to the hospital, and one of our nurses who came with us from the United States, she was actually pregnant at the time. And we used her as an example, and they were able to see the baby moving. They were fascinated. And the fact that a king or a man can know if his baby is going to be a boy or a girl, that was breaking news for them. So, you know, we have to use tactical ways to kind of introduce them slowly to the technology, and they embraced it. That whole village now are enjoying that portable ultrasound machine. So it comes with really working on the grassroots with the community leaders for them to be the voice. When they hear from the leaders, they are more adhesive to listen.
The importance of community leaders.
Very. They play a significant role.
Once again, it's an example. And we are going to continue our discussion in a moment. And Erwin, it's so good to have you here.
Oh, man, having fun.
And you're having an awesome event coming up. We'll talk about that. We're going to take a short break. When we come back, we'll have more of our discussion on health literacy with Erwin Bueteng. But for now, it's time for the news with Eva Yuma.
The World Health Organization says by the year 2020, two neglected tropical diseases may be eliminated in the world's poorest countries: lymphatic filariasis, commonly known as elephantiasis, and trachoma, a blinding illness, will be curbed thanks to a partnership of governments, charitable foundations, and pharmaceutical companies. Recent data released by the WHO show that in 2015, 979 million people received preventative chemotherapy for neglected tropical diseases, an increase of 121 million from 2014. USAID's Neglected Tropical Diseases Program and the WHO have put a priority on eliminating 17 NTDs in 149 countries, where one in six people suffer from at least one of the illnesses. Researchers from Johns Hopkins University School of Medicine have found evidence of what attracts malaria mosquitoes to humans for a blood meal. They say some people appear to taste better to malaria mosquitoes than others. Scientists are trying to figure out why so they can turn that information into a repellent to protect from malaria. By studying the smell and taste detecting neurons, the findings suggest that it's possible mosquitoes likely not only the smell of humans, but their flavor as well. And finally, U.S. researchers say a new drug combination helped stave off a monkey version of HIV for nearly 2 years after stopping all treatments, raising hopes for a functional cure for HIV. The treatment involved standard HIV drugs known as antiretroviral therapy, or ART, plus an experimental antibody. Scientists at the National Institutes of Health say the findings are promising. They have already begun testing the drug Takeda, known generically as vedolizumab, in people newly infected with HIV. The study was published in the journal Science. And that's a wrap-up of the latest health news.
Welcome back. For those of you joining us late tonight, we are discussing health literacy with our guest Irving Boateng, president of the organization Quality Health Africa. And Irving, before the break, we mentioned the fact that you're having an event coming up to address the very issue. So yes, tell us about it.
So Quality Health Africa launched the Quality Health Africa Summit, which is an international summit that brings together nonprofit organizations, government agencies, civil society organizations, and then Africans in the diaspora to have the discussions that are impeding the healthcare system in our continent. So we launched it last year, and it was very successful. We had one here and one in Ghana. And this year, we're going to host our second health summit in Congress at the Rayburn House in the Gold Room Thursday, October 20th, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. And the topic is health literacy in developing Africa. It's going to be a very engaging topic. We have doctors, health workers, and presidents of NGOs on the panel, and it's going to be a very explosive to figure out how health literacy is impacting the healthcare system.
And what are you expecting from such event? Because we see a lot of time people have summits, people have conferences, seminars, and everything. But one of the questions that I know personally, I always ask: what about the follow up? What happens after the gathering, and we talk and we eat and everything? What next? So, what do you hope to get out of it?
So, the strategy that I'm using for my organization is we have the summits, and then we follow it up with our annual health fairs. So, whatever the findings are, we adjust and provide that need during our health fair. So, this year we're talking about health literacy. Whatever we learn there, we do the after action report. And then we'll definitely make sure we implement those needs in Ghana and other countries when we do our health fair. So we actually do our summits before our annual visits to these villages, and then we're able to implement or add some knowledge to what we already have so that they can benefit from it. So ours is more of the first step towards our annual goal. Okay. Ultimate goal is going there, having health fairs, and then whatever we learn, we implement it, and we publish them on our website as well.
And making a difference, obviously, is as you mentioned, your goal, one of your goals. Tell us about the health fair. What have you been able to do in the past?
So as of now, we have screened over 20,000 people during our health fairs, and we have eye care, dental care, and basic checks when we do our health fairs, and donated over $120,000 worth of medical equipment and supplies to hospitals all around the sub-Saharan sector. Mm-hmm. So we really focus in the communities, and right now we have secured a 22-acre plot on which we are going to build a state-of-the-art medical facility that captures the synergy mm-hmm. in the quality of health services that needs to be in Africa.
Very promising. Yes. How long do you anticipate this project will take to come to fruition?
Our current goal is the year 2020. Okay. That's when we are going to launch that hospital. And we are working very hard on it with our partners and gathering sponsorships to give us the capacity to start building before the end of 2017.
Great. And Erwin, we will come back to you shortly. Now we are very glad to have with us Dr. Asare, Dr. Akwa Asare, as I mentioned earlier. She is the Quality Improvement Solution Science, Education and Quality Division with the American College of Cardiology. Dr. Asare, welcome to the show.
Hi, how are you?
It's great to have you. Listen, we're talking about health literacy, and we wanted to know if you can give us an idea, an assessment of the current level of regional literacy among African subregions.
I can't really give it to you in percentages per se, for a variety of reasons. One, it's not something that most of our governments have actually taken into consideration. Uh-huh. So there's no research per se.
Okay.
It's not something that governments really even look at or really understand or consider. So as far as the actual research, we don't have any. And secondly, in general, I would say it's quite inadequate for a variety of reasons, given kind of the nature of the literacy in general on the continent, as well as the fact that a lot of the medicines, et cetera, that are coming are not coming from the West. In many cases, they're coming from the Eastern side. And so you have issues, of course, with, you know, the way things are labeled and what language they're labeled in, et cetera. So unlike it is here in the States, where health literacy really has become a big thing and a big push because individuals understand what happens when you don't have health literacy, it's not found in the same way back home.
Now, what are what is the role of the government in increasing literacy? I mean, we understand that government obviously has an important role to play. Can you elaborate a little bit on that, please?
Well, there are a few ways in which the government really needs to be involved. And one, I'll just go to like just a few. One has to do, first of all, with noting its importance. Because once you know that it's important, then you can actually set aside monies. You have to have funding in order to have programs such as pilot testing programs that you can use in specific areas and say, okay, we did this pilot test. Did it work? If yes, how do we change it to apply it to other parts of the country and other parts of the healthcare sector? So first and foremost, there has to be allocation of resources and funding. Secondly, once that funding has been allocated, it actually has to be given out. It can't just sit there. It has to actually be used. And then thirdly, it has to be evaluated through such things as pilot programs, et cetera. Mm-hmm. In addition, governments need to work in PPPs, basically private partnerships that they can have with other stakeholders, other organizations, other multinational corporations, and other nations, actually, as well as stakeholders within that country, educators, their ministries, et cetera, to get everybody on board. So it's going to take allocation of funds, and it's going to take working collaboratively with as many possible stakeholders.
What about the people themselves? What can they do? What is their responsibility and their roles?
Well, individuals have really two main responsibilities. One is advocacy and the other is knowledge. So advocacy is organizational. For instance, when you have physicians in a hospital, that they can get stakeholder support from administrators and senior staff. They can have training of staff, orientations and workshops. They can post resources. These can be incorporated into strategic goals that the hospital systems have, the clinics have. They can be incorporated in evaluation of performance outcomes and educational initiatives. And then there's also developing work groups. And the secondly is the knowledge aspect. So that's making sure that what is being said is said in a language that is understood by the individuals who are being taught, using actual visuals, infographics that are culturally appropriate and understandable within that particular sector. Posters, infographics, wonderful. And then the last two is media collaboration, working with, we know back home, radio, TV, newspapers are really big. So working with these sort of industries to push out initiatives, and of course, working with educators. and looking at how individuals are educated and how that can correlate with the way in which information is presented.
Now, Dr. Asare, when literacy in general is one thing and health literacy is another thing, what is your take on when we see people who are well-educated but still have poor health literacy?
Well, that's because it's important to understand the difference between the two, right? So literacy is simply a person's ability to read, write, speak, compute, and solve problems at levels that are necessary to function on their job and in society, achieve their goals, develop their own potential. Health literacy is something completely different. It's the degree to which an individual has the capacity to obtain, process, and understand basic health information and services needed to make appropriate health decisions. So that involves knowledge, capacity, and something called numeracy, which is calculating, like, can you calculate cholesterol levels, measurements, you know how many pills, how many milligrams are in a pill. So these are actually two different forms of literacy. So if you are literate, then that enables you to become health literate, but it is still a process.
So when we address this issue in sub-Saharan Africa, where do we start? We start by educating people with general education and then move to health literacy, or we can still educate people that are illiterate in understanding health, some basic health that will help knowledge that will be important for their well-being?
You do both, actually. You continue to work with literacy, increasing literacy rates, because an illiterate population unfortunately becomes a dangerous population in many ways because they don't necessarily know how to take care of themselves in many ways.
Okay.
I'm not saying that they can't at all. I'm just saying that, for instance, if you're looking at a pill bottle, and you can't read at all, and you're just taking a pill, just take a pill, that's a problem. That's what I mean by dangerous. Mm-hmm. But you can also do the health literacy using, a lot of health literacy is visual, infographics, putting up posters that are easily understood that, okay, you take this, you have a picture of somebody throwing up and they're holding their stomach and they're holding their head. Well, that gives you some basic understanding that person is sick.
Mm-hmm.
And when they have this, they need to go here. Maybe the next image is that of a clinic. It's using basic visuals to teach. So you can do both.
Okay, that's a good point. And we're running out of time, but Erwin, I will let you have the final words. What would you like the takeaway to be, whether it's from the event that you're planning this upcoming weekend or just looking at your work with health literacy in general?
In its totality, what I'm going to say is health literacy is a very important topic, and we need to continue having these conversations. Quality Health Africa is going to continue having the conversations, and if you are in the DMV area, we invite you to come to the Rayburn House on Thursday, the Gold Room, from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m., and join us, have these discussions to figure out best ways to improve health literacy. Africa is not going to change by itself. It's going to take all of us.
Of course. Thank you so much, Erwin Boyting, for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. Asare Akua, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. It's nice to talk to you again. Last time we chatted was about Ebola.
That's right. That's right, of course. Thank you for coming back on air with us. Thank you. All right. All the time we have for this edition of Health Chat. Thanks to all our listeners. And we thank again our guests, Erwin Boateng with Quality Health Africa and Dr. Akua Asare with the American College of Cardiology. And I'm your host, Lenore Mudu, in Washington, D.C., with producer Jackson Vunganyi and Eva Yuma for the news. Until next time, take care, be well, and strive to make every day a healthy day.